When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
21 of the last 22 times they scored. Here's Sims to throw in third down. Up the middle, touchdown, Bavaro. Mark Bavaro goes to one knee. Genuflex in prayer as a 13-yard throw over the middle answers the prayer for the Giants fan.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, my last hour here tonight before Yankees baseball starts, KM in the PM, Keith McPherson on The Fan. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. At Keith underscore McPherson on the Twitter machine, at Keith McPherson on the TikTok and Instagram and everywhere else. If you do that, back to the conversation at hand, the New York Yankees before Mike Golic Jr. is supposed to call in about 10 minutes so we can talk football to end my show. Santos up in the Bronx. You got it.
Yes. How you doing, guy?
Good.
I'm a member of the Ohtani Hater Club.
Oh, good.
Yes. I'm not a fan. So I have 2 points, and I hang up, and I let you give me an answer. First of all, for years, MLB did not accept DH as a MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And now
David Ortiz spoke out on it, and they all killed David Ortiz for saying it. Yep, go on.
And David Ortiz was correct. And my other point is, if Aaron Boone is to get fired, is there a team out there that will take him?
Thanks for the call, Santos. That was very good. First off, I just saw Ohtani hater, so I'm thinking he's calling me an Ohtani hater. But no, I know there are a ton of Ohtani haters out there because it's like, why does this guy get special treatment? Why does this guy get everything bent to him? There's an Ohtani rule now for when this guy pitches and hits. Now that there's a universal DH, we're all just, Ohtani's going to be the first 50-50 guy, automatic MVP. Every year that this guy plays, the MVP trophy is here. Francisco Lindor, it sucks that he got hurt, but man, for weeks I was pushing that conversation. Kudos to Tommy Lugauer, who was the first one to come into that conversation, or at least to put it on The Fan. And at first people laughed at him, but then Lindor made him right. And it sucks that we're not able to watch Lindor right now add to the case. But, I mean, Ohtani played for 2 months his rookie year and won Rookie of the Year over Miguel Andujar in 2018, who carried the Yankees at times. You know, I looked at Ohtani this year like, it's easier to steal bases. There's more emphasis on the stolen bases. Ton of guys steal bases. The National League MVP before him stole 73 bases last year. I don't care about the stolen bases so much. The home runs, okay. He's a home run hitter. He's a power hitter. He's a DH. He's not pitching this year. So until he takes the mound, I don't think you can automatically give it to him. But I guess, you know, his OPS, his homers, RBI, they're all going to be higher than Lindor. He's going to get it. But what about the beginning of the season? What about the stain that he put on the start of this MLB season? Oh, Keith, don't mention it. Don't mention that. Allegedly, you know, he gambled on baseball. But I think, of course, he did. It's just, I'm not dumb. I wasn't born yesterday. You can't tell me that a man loses that much money to a guy that he spends every day with and doesn't know. Doesn't know. But I get it. Like, it makes no one money to prosecute Shohei Ohtani. Everyone loses if Ohtani loses.
And the narrative has gone so far that it's affecting game decisions. We saw on Saturday night Sunday Night Baseball, the Braves decide to intentionally walk Ohtani to get to Mookie Betts. With two outs and a runner in scoring position, I'd much rather face Ohtani than face Betts. Betts is a guy who can get a poke, you know, bat control, much higher on base percentage. Whereas Ohtani, he has the home runs, but
the legend of Ohtani continues to grow.
A lot more. Yeah, that made no sense.
Here come the make it happen Mets.
Help the Mets, by the way, that they did walk Ohtani to get to Betts.
Nimmo scores. First run is on the board. Tyrone Taylor, you better call Tyrone. Tyrone Taylor getting some love. Tyrone Taylor getting some playing time. What was I about to say about Ohtani? Oh, yeah, I saw something about, like, I get it. There was something like 80 to 90% of the Asian community that visits Los Angeles stops by Dodger Stadium to see Shohei Ohtani. How do they get those numbers? I don't know. How that even pops up on my feed, I don't know. But, yeah, I know I saw it with the Anaheim Angels, right? Ohtani, every time Ohtani came up to bat, there were like specific changing advertisements in the ballpark for like the Japanese audience. They like watch every at bat. I get it, man. I mean, What I will say is we have never seen what he is when he is pitching and hitting. I give him respect for that. But he isn't just this, like, baseball god that nobody else is in the conversation for MVP, and he's just above all reproach. I just feel like he's gotten just different treatment from his intake, you know. And maybe I'm a salty Yankee fan. He didn't want to give the Yankees any love. He didn't even give the Yankees any time, and the Yankees went and signed Giancarlo Stanton instead. And then he beats out Miguel Andujar for Rookie of the Year. I just haven't been a fan since. Anthony in Brooklyn on the fan. What's up, Ant?
Hey, what's up, Keith? I hope the family is well.
Yes, we are.
If you can't say it, if you can't say it, I will. I think New Balance should have dropped Ohtani from their resources. Let me tell you, I've been a major supporter up until that time.
They've dropped American players for less allegations.
Exactly, for less allegations, and they kept him, and he's the face of New Balance. No, I'm sorry, I'll never buy a product that he sponsors anyway.
Good.
Anyway, I got a quick question for you, Keith. Last night when I was watching the game, Oswaldo Cabrera was bouncing behind second base, and Michael Kay did a split screen to show that if he was to take a certain step to the left or a certain step to the right, that it would be in violation of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a violation called, who would call it and what would the penalty be?
Yeah, I thought that yesterday. I don't think they will call it. I don't think it will be enforced.
Gotcha. But what is the penalty? You can't be on one side of the base and not the other?
I don't know the exact penalty for this new, you know, banning of the shift and where guys got to line up. Do they give them a base if there's runners on? What if there's no runners on? Is the batter awarded first? It's not a real thing. It's not, I don't know. I'll look it up. But I think I caught that last night, too, and I'm just like, it's not going to get called. Especially in a game like last night, there's no reason to call it.
Exactly, right. There's no reason to call it. Exactly. I was wondering if the Mariners, like, you know, their head honcho had to come out and say, listen, he's on the other side of the base, and then it gets, you know, looked at. But like I said, it was a curiosity on my part, and thank you very much for the time. Have a good one.
Thanks for the call, Anthony. Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to look up real quick, and now Google has like AI built into it. It like comes up like ChatGPT. You know, they're trying to increase batting average, improve that athleticism, restore traditional outcomes, eliminate overshifting, require more athletic plays. But what is the penalty? What is the penalty if you're caught doing this? I don't know. No one does it.
I assume a striker or like the same as the pitch clock. No, pitcher.
You get the base.
Well, no, you got a ball.
Is that what it is? Pitch clock violations, a ball strike? I thought a pitch clock violation.
If it's on the batter, he gets a strike. If it's on the pitcher, he gets a ball.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because I've seen guys strike out like that with the pitch clock, and that's stupid. All these rules are dumb. And like, who keeps up with this? I watch the game, but I do not care if they're going to call a shift rule infringement. And I don't know what the outcome is. I'm not that deep in the weeds on this type of stuff. And I guess Cabrera is just testing it. 888-808-1019. I have Mike Golic Jr. joining us right now. And I know everybody now wants to call in and talk about Ohtani, but we're going to switch. We're going to talk a little football. But you can hold after I'm done talking some Jets, Giants, NFL news with Mike. We'll get back to the Ohtani calls. Mike is on right now? Okay, let's go to Mike right now. We won't keep him waiting. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mike Golic Jr. on the fan. Thanks for calling in, Mike.
Appreciate you having me, man. How you doing?
Good, good. I mean, you know, it's New York, so everybody wants to talk Yankees and Mets. But I'm not on tomorrow, and the Jets will face the Patriots. So I wanted to powwow a little bit with you on that. I mean, right out the gate, let's talk Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers is knocking off rust. I think he's only going to get better as the season goes along. But I look at this Patriots defense, and I'm like, I think that they're better than people gave them any credit for. People said they weren't going to win a game. And, I mean, so far they've gone up against Joe Burrow and Geno Smith. What do you expect to see out of the Patriots? Short week here, Thursday night football, home opener for the Jets versus Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I think the Patriots have shown you this is still, even though Gerard Mayo's in year one as a head coach, an incredibly well-coached team on both sides of the football. I think defensively, that was blue-chip stock you were buying in terms of the Patriots on defense. And they've had guys like Keon White, their defensive lineman recently out of Georgia Tech, who seems to be taking that next step, insert himself as a playmaker up front on the defense that we know lost Matthew Judon before the season. They went out there and physically took it to the Seattle Seahawks last week in a way that embodies what that team is about. And then offensively, what Alex Van Pelt has been able to do around Jacoby Brissett is a really quality veteran quarterback who toes that line between backup and starter. They're going to run the rock. They're going to be able to do that. We know pass protection, certainly an area they can struggle. But if you're this Jets team, you got to bring your lunch pail and get ready for a physical outing, because the Patriots are going to make you feel them up front on both sides of the ball. And we know for Aaron Rodgers and this Jets team, offensively, that was the area most people had concerns about, what the offensive line's been able to do up front. So far, the returns on that have been pretty good for this point in the season. And then defensively, hey, you're dealing with the injury to Jermaine Johnson right now. You've had the holdout with Hassan Reddick going on at pass rusher. So there have been some question marks there for that defense. But ultimately, this is a game that if the Jets are going to get to go the places that they want to, this is a really good test at this point of the year, because the Patriots, you're absolutely right, have far exceeded most people's expectations for them early.
Yeah, it's a game that I think the Jets have to win. It's the home opener. There's so much anticipation for Aaron Rodgers running out on that field, but it won't all be on him. I think it's a fishy line here, a 6-point spread in favor of the Jets, but the over-under is 39.5. So it's like expected to be low scoring, but the Jets winning by a touchdown. C.J. Mosley is hurt. D.J. Reed is hurt. They're 50-50 to play. And when you think about Ramondre Stevenson running the ball, and you think about this Jets defense, what they looked at like against the 49ers, like I expect it to be back and forth. I expect the Patriots to be able to move the ball, score some points. I think it's going to be closer than a 6-point spread in favor of the Jets.
I would agree, and I think it could be one of those games that is a bit of a rock fight offensively, because we've seen as the Jets have been gelling on the offensive side of the football, it's been a little bit further, fewer and further between in terms of some of those connections with Garrett Wilson. But I'm with you, especially coming off a short week. That's way too many points given what this Patriots team has put on tape already. I think that line would have made a lot of sense going into the season when we all thought, hey, this team might be in contention for the number one overall pick or one of the worst teams in the league as they get ready for whenever the bridge is to their quarterback and one of their top overall draft picks in Drake May. But now you look at this team and go, all right, they still do a lot of the things that were quintessentially Patriots for so long. And you got to account for that if you're the Jets, but I expect a close game. I do expect a low scoring game, but it is one that ultimately the Jets have the firepower to win that New England just does not right now.
Yeah, agreed. On the other side of MetLife Stadium, the Giants fans are cooking up trades. They want to trade Daniel Jones for Bryce Young and let Bryce Young play the next 2 years until Archie Manning comes out, and they want to draft Archie Manning and let him be the new franchise quarterback. What do you say to that?
At this point, unfortunately, where you're at with the Giants is this roster would make that shuffling deck chairs in the Titanic. Bringing in Bryce Young would be bringing in a quarterback that's physically less capable of getting himself out of the jams that Daniel Jones is right now. The offensive line's not where it needs to be. The offense itself overall just has too many flaws. But at the very least, Daniel is big, a powerful athlete that can help himself out in those situations. Bryce Young, you're having to talk about come in and really rewiring a young man that the Panthers helped screw up a lot last year with the physical toll that he took. And I just don't think that the Giants are any place to do that. So putting your eyes towards the future and, hey, talking about, you know, Arch Manning or, hell, Quinn Ewers after what we've seen from him so far this year as the quarterback of the future that's not on your roster, I understand for the Giants at this point because it has been all bad there early on outside of Malik Nabers.
Yeah, I think they're better than they obviously showed in the first 2 weeks. And I look at their head coach. I'm assuming you watched Hard Knocks. And the way Brian Daboll presented in Hard Knocks, he seemed extremely comfortable. He literally had his feet up multiple times. It's like he's hanging out. And my message to him yesterday was, hey, no more feet up. Like, you should be uncomfortable. You shouldn't sleep until you get your first win. And when he meets the media the first week, he's saying, it's all on me. It starts with me. We got to be better. It falls on me. And then the second week, you know, he's like eyeing the media members down. I'm looking at Brian Daboll like, hey, you got to coach them out of this. You were the coach of the year 2 years ago. And looking at the Giants' schedule, they could easily start off 0-8 in theory. And if that's the case, it's tank time, and you might not have a job. What do you think about Brian Daboll, especially with Shane Bowen coming in to replace Wink Martindale, who a lot of people think Wink Martindale and the way that ended, that was all on Brian Daboll and him yelling and screaming and, you know, just having control of things. And then what do you think about him taking the play calling from Mike Kafka? Like, this guy has taken so much on and done so much and changed so much. If they're not successful, his seat should be hot. It's on him. They have to win. All the talk around Daniel Jones, I mean, benching Daniel Jones is not even in the question right now. It's about them finding a way to scheme and surprise some teams, I think they can beat the Browns. What do you think about Brian Daboll coaching his way out of this?
Yeah, you have a lot more faith in them against the Browns than I do based on what that Browns defense is capable of against that.
This is the home of the Giants. This is WFAN, home of the Giants. Got to have some faith.
Hey, you know what? Listen, more power to you there. I hope that's rewarded at some point. But I think you're right with Brian Daboll, the way that he's acted. And we saw some of the back and forth in the most recent press conference, going back and forth with the media about some of the decisions made late in that game. It sounds like a coach who understands and feels the pressure of his job being on the line right now, taking back play calling. All these things are the things you do when you know your ass is on the line. You want two hands on the wheel. If you're going to go down, you want to go down at least swinging the bat, not with the bat on your back, with someone else working on your behalf. And that's a tough environment to work in when the only person you trust is yourself, because you know that's on the line. And so players can feel that. Like, everyone from the organization on down feels that sense of urgency. And when you're a team that's already undermanned personnel-wise, that's a tough environment to find success in.
Yeah, we've beaten the conversation into the ground, but they made history last week. 7 field goals against them, not one touchdown. They're the first team to score 3 touchdowns and lose in regulation like that. When it comes down to it, you have to be prepared. I've talked about it a bunch this week. I'm just like, how do you have a 37-year-old kicker that was injured last year where you had to go get Mason Crosby? This year he's hurt. You know that he's hurt. He's on the injury report. He goes through warm-ups. He's wincing during warm-ups. He hurts himself, and then you don't have a backup plan. It's almost like they found a way to lose. It could have been avoided. Have you ever heard of anything like that? It's just like, I don't know how you don't have an emergency kicker. I've heard of Chad Ochocinco being able to kick for the Bengals and Eric Reed being able to kick for the Chiefs. It's like, how do you default into an offense that you're not confident in having to go for 2 and not having someone that can kick it through the uprights?
Yeah, I mean, emergency kickers, one thing, if this was something that came out of nowhere, and I referenced the back and forth between Brian Daboll and the media about the emergency kicker, about, hey, you know, it was a hamstring that he pulled running after a tackle, but he already had the lower body injury, and how are we connected? And I'm not a doctor, and you're not a doctor, and all that stuff. Regardless, is, yeah, you had a kicker with a lower body injury at a critical juncture that cost you the game. That's on the head coach for not having some plan in preparation. And again, to your point, when you're taking on all this added responsibility because you feel the pressure and the walls closing in around you, you end up missing things. It's a lot. There's a lot of offensive play callers at head coach right now, and guys still maintain play calling. That's a really difficult thing to do, to go through and have to do all the CEO stuff during the week, all the stuff as the head of the organization, lead the whole team, and then game plan offensively to feel comfortable enough going out there to give your best team and your offense the best chance by calling plays. If you're a defensive coach, calling the plays for the defense, that's a lot on someone's plate. You combine that with the sense of urgency that comes for anyone naturally when they feel, hey, my future might be on the line each and every week, each and every down. Then you tend to miss things, or you tend to gloss over stuff because you're worried about other things. And it's understandable, again, when you're taking on as much as Brian Daboll feels compelled to take on right now.
Yeah, they're 0-2. They absolutely can't go 0-3, but that might be in the cards. And I think if you end up going 0-5, it's tank time. It's time to really think about some changes and some stuff. I mean, thinking about changes, the Carolina Panthers going 0-2, they're a mess. I think David Tepper, he's getting exactly what he deserves. They have a new head coach in Canales. I think they're trying to figure it out. But, you know, I look at this NFL, and last year we saw so many backup quarterbacks. Here we are going into week 3. Andy Dalton is starting. Malik Willis is starting. Skylar Thompson is starting. It's crazy to think about the injuries and the benchings and how quickly we get there in the NFL. Let's talk about the injuries. I've been saying it's because guys don't play in the preseason. And even guys being rusty, like Caleb Williams not playing as much in the preseason as like a C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young, excuse me. Bryce Young not playing as much in the preseason as a C.J. Stroud. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, we're looking at this week 3 now where seasons are on the line. Joe Burrow and the Bengals, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. The NFL is wild. I think that teams have to start playing at least in that last game of the preseason to get ready to go. You can't use week 1 as a preseason because you lose there, you lose the next week, and now you're looking like a team that can't make the postseason.
Yeah, I think at the same time, like, ascribing too much to the preseason in terms of injuries is an area that I'm just not comfortable going. Like, these are high-priced winning machines in the NFL. if playing guys in the preseason had history and data they collected that showed it would give a lower chance of injury once the regular season started, they would play more people in the preseason. This is a violent game where the ball bounces weird. Stuff happens like this sometimes when the collisions are this vicious based on the level of athlete that we're dealing with now and the speed of the game. So it's a tough part of it, but at the same time, your point about slow starts is well served. You've got some teams, though, that are kind of comfortable in this mode. Like the Bengals used to go an 0-2. It's been beaten in the ground by now, but Joe Burrow in the 5 years he's been in the NFL has won one game in weeks 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And yet they're a team that has contended for Super Bowls before. They took Kansas City down to the wire, all that stuff. So some teams are more comfortable in it than others, but part of this is also organizational competency. The Panthers are a perfect example of that. You got a meddling owner who's got a history of a quick trigger finger. We can't act surprised that they have screwed up another quarterback and now tried to move on from that in most people's estimation too soon, because that's what happens when you've got an owner that's not comfortable letting the football people do what he hired them to do. On the other side of that, you got Green Bay and Malik Willis, where, hey, weird bounce. Like, hey, Jordan Love, no amount of preseason game was going to prevent him from getting his MCL rolled up on or whatever it was in his knee. But now them overcoming that, that last game, Matt LaFleur coached his ass off around Malik Willis, changed the nature of their offense, ran the ball about 80% of the time, put a bunch of spread option stuff in that you see in college to try and help his quarterback get through that game and maximize his skill, and gave him confidence. Malik Willis made throws in that game we didn't see in Tennessee, because somewhere along the line there, he was empowered enough by this coach to go out and execute with a team that clearly believed in him enough for him to believe in himself. So you're going to see in a lot of these instances, Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota with Sam Darnold right now, a staff that believes in the players, empowers them, and offers a disguised schematic advantage with some of the other parts of the roster they've built up around him, can give some of these guys a chance to succeed and weather the storm until they get the cavalry back.
Okay, last thing for you. I want to play a quick game. It's are they for real or are they not with these 2-0 teams? And you can say whether they're for real or not, and then give me one sentence on why. So let's start with the Seattle Seahawks. They're 2-0. Are they for real or not?
They're for real, I think, especially because the Rams look like they're going to be too beat up to party for most of the season. That second spot in the NFC West is wide open. Mike McDonald's come in early on defense and really set the foundation, oddly enough, in the secondary, giving up some rushing yards right now. But I think they've got the personnel by the end of the year to get better in that area, even if they won't be perfect. And then offensively, you saw in the last game, the run game there, still a work in progress. I worry about them a bit late in the season being a team that could maybe make the playoffs or win a game in the playoffs. But being in the mix in year one for Mike McDonald, very possible the way Geno Smith's playing ball right now and with the way that Jaxon Smith-Njigba is coming along in a wide receiver room that's already chock full of talent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kevin O'Connell, Brian Flores, and the Minnesota Vikings. Are they for real or not?
I'm going to say for real. Brian Flores wants to kill you with hammers on the defensive side of the football. And he went up against one of the best minds, if not the best offensive play caller in the sport, and Kyle Shanahan, who, yeah, was down a couple of weapons, but still has more than most, and has a starting quarterback, and made them look a way that we don't often see with that offense. You combine it with, hey, listen, you're banged up on offense right now if you're Minnesota. Jordan Addison's been dealing with the ankle. Justin Jefferson goes out with a quad, and you still find a way to be productive in that game. I think they're absolutely for real right now in a very crowded NFC North.
Okay, I gave you two from the NFC. Let's go with two from the AFC. The Los Angeles Chargers, led by Mr. Harbaugh and those guys, are they for real or not?
I'm going to say not in terms of playoff contention yet. I think looking at the opponents for the first couple of weeks gives me a bit of pause about saying they're all the way back. For Justin Herbert in this offense, we've seen a little bit of Ladd McConkey show up. Quentin Johnston, their former first-round pick, also had a big game this last week. But I do wonder if they're dynamic enough in that area to hold out. Love seeing the way that they've reset the foundations offensively and on the defensive line. I do always have worries about the Chargers staying healthy in those areas. And quite honestly, that would be the biggest win for the Harbaugh regime in the early going, is if from a sports medicine side, they were able to keep their guys on the field longer at the premier positions that have traditionally snake bit them.
Okay, one more. Mike Tomlin said he's not going to tell you the ingredients of the hot dog. You might not like it, but the Steelers start 2-0, and that's a good way to get another winning record on the season. Are the Steelers for real or not?
I'm going to say not right now. I still think they're probably going to finish above 500. They can flirt with the playoffs, but we know the line is, it's on the walls in the Southside facility in Pittsburgh. The standard is the standard. They're used to lifting trophies. Their fan base has anxiety about winning games. And right now, while the offense is getting by, I just don't think that they're potent enough to get you the wins down the stretch. If, you know, Cincinnati figures it out, I think when the Baltimore Ravens figure it out, and I think then, even with T.J. Watt and that defense playing as well as they are, you're going to run into some problems that are a bit outside your weight class still with this roster offensively.
Awesome. Mike Golic Jr., ladies and gentlemen. Mike, you're the man. Thanks for joining me again.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
888-808-1019. It is 8:30. This show will end at 9 o'clock. If you'd like to get a word in, dial the number. Steve in Rockland, we will come to you next. This is Keith McPherson on The Fan. The Mets have absolutely poured it on the Nationals. It is 9-0. All I kept seeing was homers and runs being scored. The Mets are looking to sweep the Nationals. They're handling business without Lindor. This is Keith McPherson on The Fan. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Start some trouble and call The Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Yeah. All right. I've got like 10 minutes here. We've got calls coming through on the Mets absolutely smoking the Nationals. That was one of the crazier innings for the Mets all year. We've got calls on the Jets after we spoke with Mike Golic Jr. about what's going to happen with the Patriots tomorrow. I think it's going to be a close game, man. That's a rivalry. We've got calls on Ohtani as well as now Brian Daboll because we spoke about the Giants. Something I wanted to speak about tonight, man. I'm just always on this mission to inspire or retire, and this day 5 years ago, I wasn't even thinking about this until I woke up. But shout out to my guy, Caleb, who's a big Yankees fan and came aware of me 5 years ago today when I was walking around New York City with the Mariano Rivera jersey on. I had a camera crew following me from the Yes Network. Shout out to the Yes Network. I always say the Yes Network put me on. They took an absolute chance on me just through some internet stuff and some podcasts in 2019. I did my first ever Yankees podcast, and it got some traction. And, you know, the guys that I did the podcast with didn't even believe in me, but people on the outside did. And I met Jonathan Ziegler, who was a producer at the Yes Network, and he came up with an idea for a commercial called Fandom Acts of Kindness, celebrating the Yankees winning the division and going on to the postseason. And it was me as a Yankee fan walking around Times Square, walking around Bryant Park, and just pulling up on people with Yankees jerseys, Yankees hats, Yankees book bags, or people that didn't have any Yankee logos and just giving out Yankees merch and Yankees swag and just kind of just, you know, creating a moment. And, man, I think back to where I was. I was unemployed at the time. I think back to who I was. I was worried. I was very confused about, you know, whether I should go back to what I was doing, being a social media manager, working in marketing, or whether I should push forward. And, you know, that opportunity got posed to me, and that day walking around New York, where I've walked around New York feeling like a nobody, I've walked around New York broke, I've walked around New York with nothing going on, and that was the first day that I walked around and I felt like somebody with a camera crew and people asking, who is this? You know, and at the time, I couldn't really tell them too much. I just told them, you know, follow my Instagram or my Twitter. I'm just a Yankee fan, like, give me some time. And fast forward 5 years, there's a lot of people that became aware of me there, like my boy Caleb, who posted on his Instagram today how inspired he is and how much he admires my journey. I've always been kind of locked in, and that was the first one, and that let me know to keep going. So my message to you out there is you can do whatever you want out here if you start. You know, you can do whatever you want out here if you want it bad enough and you work. If people see you and people give you an opportunity, take it. You don't know where it can lead you. That was my first commercial. That was my first opportunity to do anything in, like, sports media. And, you know, there were people at the Yes Network that saw my talent and saw something in me, and they gave me an opportunity to star in a commercial. Not a famous guy, not a former athlete, nothing. And fast forward 5 years from 9/18/19, I'm hosting on The Fan in New York. 888-808-1019, hoping that the Yankees win the division again and celebrate going to the postseason tonight. The universe never unconnects. How great would that be if tonight the Yankees clinch and I say, wow,
They got the champagne on ice.
Yeah. You know, we celebrated 5 years ago walking around the city shooting a commercial for the Yes Network. You know, the Yankees are going to the postseason. They can clinch. Tonight. Steve out in Rockland. I said I would come to you next. What's up, man? You're on the Fan.
And I'm ready, man. Okay, so before I get to my Ohtani thing, we had a teachable NFL moment yesterday. We watched the Eagles play well enough to lose. Whereas the Giants, by scoring three touchdowns, giving up none, and losing in regulation, for the first time ever in NFL history, invented a way to lose.
Yeah.
Okay? There is a difference. Now, as far I have an award for Ohtani, a very special one. I hope Rod Manfred's listening. I hope you're listening, Commissioner. It's the MVG. That's most valuable gambler. Allow me to say it. All right?
Yeah, he is the most valuable gambler because he's so valuable to Major League Baseball, they didn't prosecute him. They came up with all of these other shenanigans, all of these things that were going on. Oh, yeah, the money was being, turned into chips and brought through casinos. Oh, yeah, all right. There's all this stuff going on, and Ohtani knew nothing of it. He's so secretive about what team he's going to sign with. We didn't know he even had a love interest, and then he just pops out with a wife after this all comes out. Like, okay.
I mean, that dude, and you know what? I always went hard on Pete Rose. I really did. It had nothing to do with 1976 either. Didn't. But I always went hard on Pete Rose for the gambling. And now he's like a little angel compared to this dude.
Oh, yeah. Now gambling is everywhere. You watch Major League Baseball. You watch the Yankee game. They're telling you FanDuel props, how much it is for Juan Soto to homer, Judge to homer, the odds. Thanks for the call, Steve. 888-808-1019. I got to still watch that Pete Rose doc. I started to watch the beginning of it on HBO Max and just, I don't watch TV like that. I watch live sports. I don't watch anything else. Let's go to Josh in Springfield on the Fan. You got it, Josh.
What's up, Keith? How's it going tonight?
It's going quickly. I've got six minutes left. These shows are a layup.
I just wanted to get to a quick thing and then my question. We actually met a couple months ago at the Yankee Met game in the suite. We were like ripping packs together with like Mike Lavalle from Dap Sports.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that night.
Yes.
So I told you I'd call in and I finally got the courage to call in. So your story that you just shared was you were the reason I'm back then to listening to sports radio. So thank you very much. And it's been an amazing journey to follow you. So
thanks, man.
Thank you for everything you do for sports fans in New York.
Appreciate it.
My question is about the Giants. He's, after the press conference last week, someone asked him about his job, and he just kind of looked at him and was like, I know where I am. I know I stand on business. But I was curious, is the Giants fan, it's been depressing this season. I know it's only week three, but I don't know what to think. But is the Daboll Joe Shane experiment over? Am I getting ahead of myself here? Is it too early?
It's too early. It's too early.
Turn around?
I think that they can surprise some teams. As we saw teams get upset last week that were favorites, as we saw teams that – just fell flat on their face from week one to week two, that the same thing can happen in week three. And that's why I say Daboll has to coach now. He has to scheme now. He has to surprise some people. He has to beat the books, right? Like, they have to knock some people off, have some upsets. It can't just be lose and go 0-5, 0-6, 0-7. If they do, then the conversation gets crazier. You know, like the fans in New York are not going to go for it. Like,
I'm listening.
I wasn't sure. I was like, you were breaking up. But, what I'll say.
No, I'm still here.
What I'll say is the fans in New York are not going to stand for another wasted season, an 0-for season. The voices get louder, and then a decision will have to be made. And they have fired GMs. They have fired coaches in 2 years. No one is safe. And I feel like Shane and Daboll, the way that they presented in Hard Knocks, they even said it. Like, Shane was talking to the guy from Carolina, like, yeah, hopefully we're doing this for the next 10 years. Like, they plan on being here for a decade no matter what. Daboll is comfortable, but no one should be comfortable losing like that.
Yep, I totally agree. And the Giants have, like, a lot of the right pieces. Like, I mean,
they have some talent. They improved the line. Neighbors is a stud. It has to come together. That's why I say coaching. Let's see the coaching that came out in 2022 where you did surprise teams, where you got coach of the year because you didn't have the roster. You have a much better roster now. Go coach and go knock some teams off and get some wins so that this fan base can rally around something. Thanks for the call, Josh. Appreciate you. Great meeting you. And I love when I meet you guys at the stadium or meet you guys at Fanatics Fest or whatever it is, and you guys follow up with calls. Young Alex in Lakewood, back on the Fan early. What's up, my guy?
What's up, Keith?
You know, bringing it home.
First of all, could I get a shout-out in?
Yeah, go, go.
Shout-out to the guys in Ocean Lanes. Robbie and the Cowboys fan. I don't know his name.
Is that where you're watching the game over the weekend?
I'm there a lot, as I told you already, on the air. I'm a big bowler.
Okay, so you just, that's the spot you bowl at, and, you know, the guys talk shop over there. Okay, what you got for us?
Will McDonald had an amazing game.
Yes, he did.
And I heard someone say this, that his sacks weren't so good or whatever. I don't care how you get the sacks, as long as you get these three sacks.
Oh, yeah, we're not going to remember that in Week 17 when he's got double digits. Like, we're not going to remember that.
And they drafted him. They might have drafted him a year early, but it was the who else would they have drafted?
You need him now more than ever, right? Uh-huh. John Franklin Myers, gone. Bryce Huff, gone. Got a big contract to do nothing in Philly. Now Jermaine Johnson goes down. You need him. First Jets player with three sacks in a game since Jamal Adams in 2019. First Jets defensive lineman with three sacks in a game since Henry Anderson in 2018. First Jets player with three sacks and a forced fumble since 2015. Rich Samini put that out there. Thanks for the call, Alex. Yeah, I didn't get the name in Muhammad Wilkerson. Rami Levy, a Jets fan behind the glass, you know, also does a Jets podcast. Last call of the night is perfect right now, as it's 9-0. A guy that has called my show and ranted and raved about these Mets. Let's hear what Ross in Bergen County has to say now. They're looking pretty good. I don't know, man.
What's up, KD? You're not going to get a rant from me tonight. I mean, this is what, you know, I always bring up those stretches, Miami, Oakland. They, you know, I said this team couldn't beat the teams they're supposed to beat to save their lives. And, you know, they're putting on a show tonight. And especially yesterday, you look at, I think, is the Golden Goose, where they put up the win. Statement win in and of itself yesterday, and then they get all the three other teams around them to lose too, and then obviously, you know, a couple of them picking up some ground tonight. But I mean, listen, man, the Mets are doing their thing. I mean, a guy in particular standing out is Luis Angel Acuna. Angel Acuna, every
person. He's good. But Acuna, he belongs.
He looks fantastic, dude. Everybody talking about the swing looks just like his brother. I know the height obviously isn't, you know, up to par, but you look at Altuve. If he could be another Altuve comparing height, I mean, I don't want to get ahead of myself yet. It's been a week, but I mean, listen, man, high pressure situation. We're not talking about, you know, if you want to play devil's advocate and say a guy like Mauricio last year when they were out of it, you know, so much for the 2 week hitting streak. This is you thrust Acuna into the situation. He's looked fantastic. He had the homer yesterday, albeit garbage time, but still. He's putting bat on ball, man. They're clicking. I know I hear the music, but they're clicking, man. They got to keep the tide rolling. Anyway, man, appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Ross. A 9-run fourth inning for the Mets. They'll lock it down the rest of the way with Quintana and the bullpen. Coming up next is New York Yankees baseball as the Yankees look to take the series from the Mariners and clinch a postseason spot tonight. Maybe we'll see the guys popping some champagne and get that post game. I know I'm going to stay up and watch. It just is what it is. West Coast game. I'm blessed that I work in sports now. I remember having to get up at 6 a.m. the next day. Sometimes you fall asleep, but stay right here for the call. Justin Shackle on the call with Susan Waldman, and I'll be back on Friday. I won't be here tomorrow. Thanks for listening to my show. Have a good night. I'm out.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN.